Accession number 30025, reel 7.
At the same time as you've identified the first engine, because you're going to press that fire button to armed, you've got to bring that the aircraft into one engine flight conditions. That's automatic. So you've got to be within temperature, power limitations, all the rest of it, to fly on one engine. Because you know as soon as you push that button up, it's going to cut off that engine. So you've got to be able to fly on the one engine. That's your first thing. You normally bring the speed back to 65 knots. It's another immediate action. And I say you've got to go through all the bits and pieces. It's something you just drilled into you. You know, without sitting in the cockpit, it's not as easy pointing to things. It's nothing, not here. If you were sitting in the cockpit with me, I'd say there, that. We put that to there. We do this. We do that. We pull this one back. But sitting in my living room is a bit different. But,
what about other emergencies? I mean, a bird strike or something like that? Or?
Bird strike is assessed in immediately. Obviously, if it's just bounced off the nose of the aircraft or bounced off the glass or whatever, or hit the side door, regardless of wherever it's hit, you've got land. So you land straight away within a safe area, unless it's gone down an engine intake and your engine's choked up and you're near it and it's going to close down. Then you carry it in a single engine. But if you've just whacked into a bird, you land nearest site, safe site, and you do a visual inspection to make sure that you haven't damaged anything major, you haven't got anything down the engine intake, there's none of the blades damaged, there's none of the tail rotor blades or the stabilizers damaged. If you're happy with that, you probably then phone up your base and say, look, I've hit the bird, there's nothing here, there's nothing there, there's nothing there, and I'm quite happy to continue flight back. If this damage where you think, I need somebody to look at it, an engineer, then you've obviously got to get an engineer down and then come down and check it all out so it clears your flight. But if you're just quite happy that it's just bounced off the side and there's nothing else at all, you still phone up and say, look, I've had a bump and I'll bring it back. You've got to go back then for the engineer then to clear it before any other flight. We've got single engine failures, you've got hydraulics, depending on what type of hydraulics which has failed. But the fail-safe system on the BK-17 and the 105 is if one goes out, the number two system takes over. The number two system goes, the number one takes over. They've always got a shadow, so there's no problem. And on the hydraulic side, there's probably no emergency immediate actions. It's a case of, I've got a hydraulic problem here. Number two system's taken over. Back to base. You always go back to base on hydraulics and then land on and check it. Engine failure will be obvious. The engine would be winding down on whichever engine you've got. Same thing again, immediate action is to get the aircraft in one engine flight conditions, i.e. all the power settings and the temperatures and pressures. Once the engine is completely closed down, you can fly. That's what your main priority is. And then you go through then the drills of closing down the engine, make sure the fuel's cut off, the heaters are off, any air bleeds are off, because you may have to do a landing on a single engine, or you will do if it's closed down. Fuel problems are completely different. If you ran out of fuel, you're an idiot, but anyway. You may have fuel filter blockage, which is obviously fuel blocking up in it, because all the fuel that comes out of the comes out of the tanks goes through a filter system before they go into the engines. And if you start getting one of them filters blocking up, it'll tell you fuel filter's blocking, which indication is possibility that engine's going to cut off because you've just been starved of fuel. So it's not immediate, but you've got to obviously assess the situation and probably close down an engine anyway, just in case. But so there's not many emergency actions, immediate actions. Most of them are assess and then slow timing.
And figure out what next.
Yeah.
I wonder whether you had any medical training. Was that part of
the only medical training? I did more first aid courses. You can shake a stick at in the military. It was just part of our training and our continuation through the military. Yeah, you do a first aid course every, we do a first aid refresher every year. Now in civilian life, I did one last Friday with the police, and I fly the police as well. And we did a complete day of first aid training on Friday. We've got to have an annual one, and if we use any specialist equipment, we've got to be refreshed on it, sometimes 3 monthly, sometimes 6 monthly, sometimes annual, depending on what it is.
And do you ever actually get involved in what's going on medically?
With the paramedics on the ground, unless I'm asked to, no. And the reason that is because I'm probably a gopher on site. It's go for this, go for that, as you know, and I will stand back. But if they want me to hold liquids or oxygen bottles or help hold something, all the patient down if he's thrown a wob, anything like that, I will assist. But 9 out of 10, we keep back, and they'll only ask us if it's absolutely necessary. Which is probably a good thing.
So I'm trying to get a handle on the kind of things that you go to. You go to, we've talked about traffic accidents, and you mentioned horses. What's another typical?
Well, majority of ours are RTCs, obviously, because of the vehicles. You'd be surprised how many RTCs go off in 3 counties in a day. It's absolutely, I mean, I never had any idea of the numbers until I started this job. And there's hundreds a day throughout the 3 counties. It's
this
amazing.
Is a road traffic collision?
Yeah. So we have car on car, car on pedestrian, car on motorbike, you name it, we've gone to it. Lots of horsey jobs, people falling off horses, being kicked by horses. So motorbikes is another one. Lots and lots of motorbikes, especially weekends, summer, nice weather. There's thousands of them out and lots of accidents. Heart attacks. We will go, not heart attacks, cardiac arrest will go to assist 9 times out of 10. Normally we don't carry a cardiac patient, but we'll assist because obviously if they've worked on that person for a long time, then they do get tired and need assistance on that. I think the majority of ours are rural traffic accidents. But we'll go to any that they'll send us to. In summertime, you can guarantee you're going to go up to some beach somewhere for either somebody drowning would you believe it, lots of kneecap dislocation on beaches. The reason is because they're either playing in the sand or turning in the sand, and so there's a lot of kneecaps. It's weird, but there is. Drowning, not drowning as we think of somebody not being in the water, but somebody's been in the, who's been dragged out of the water but still going through the coughing and spluttering phase. I don't think I've had many that's really been completely unconscious on the drowning side. A lot of people coming off these kite things they fly now on surfboards and getting themselves towed along. Get a lot of them, especially on the beaches when they're trying to do the ones across the actual sand. Summer again. Parachute next, going to be a few of them because we've got three parachute schools in our area. But whatever they need, we'll go.
Do you ever meet any of the people that you've helped afterwards?
We get lots of letters, lots of thank you letters from patients and from family if it doesn't turn out too well. We get a lot of sponsors and donations from patients afterwards because we've been there and we've helped. And that's what I was saying before about I feel appreciated when I go to an incident, and although I get thanked and I say to them at the time, you know, I can only do my job because you're paying for it, so don't, you know, it's a charity. But yeah, I get a lot of job satisfaction when we turn up and we do assist, save a life. I mean, we took a motorcyclist last year. Initially, didn't look very serious, and we picked him up, took him to NNN, and realised a major chest problem. Or they found out in hospital. So later on in the day, we flew the guy down to Alan Brooks, the other one down that area. Oh my God. Company.
Where is it? Where's Adam Brooks?
Cambridge,
so.
The one between Cambridge and Huntington, further down. I'm trying to think of the name. It's a specialist hospital.
It'll come back.
Yeah. But no, we had to fly him down there because he needed obviously a major operation. And he survived, and it was great. And he was almost touch and go that he wouldn't pull through. But he did, and that was a big further gap for us. But the job satisfaction is fantastic. The public response to it is fantastic. I mean, you always get people coming up to you when you're on site and saying what a good job we're doing. It's great to see you, and you know, we only had this charity thing the other day, and here you are, and you know, it's great for that. I think that not a disappointing thing, but we get a lot of PRs events around the counties that people obviously want to see the air ambulance, and we can't take the ambulance offline, so we're on duty and we'll go to these events. But I can guarantee, I think the longest I've been at one of these events is about 15 minutes, and it's just annoying. The fact that they want to see you there, you get there and you're there. I mean, I think the shortest I've been there is about 10 seconds as well. So, landing on just about to close down, and the group give us a job, and everybody's waiting there for you. You see you land on, then see you take off again, and you never go back. And I've been to a job for a PR event in the morning at about 10:30, which is on all day, and we'll say we'll pop back later on. We get a gap, and we've never had a gap, and we just continue all the way through. And that's not annoying, but disappointing for them. But yeah, it's nice to meet the people, it's nice to see them. But it's not always achievable if we're with operational aircraft.
Have you had any letters that have been particularly struck home?
I think I read one the other day, and it was we went and got this old boy from a golf course, I believe. And he was chatting away to his mother Lee. He was, 70-odd-year-old, and he was chatting away, and he was really nice and all the rest of it, and it was good, to speak to him, and we got him and we took him to the hospital. But he died, and we got a letter from his wife, and she thanked us for what we did for him and all the rest of it. But it does, just touch that little sensitive spot, and you think, well, although I never knew that guy until that day. But I spoke to him and chatted to him when he was fully alert and all. But obviously, it took some sort of major trauma. But then to be told later on, because you always ask how people got on, and so that little boy go, oh, he's dying. He said, what? Oh, yeah, that. But again, that theatre straight away, and he died. And you think, Then you get a nice little letter from his wife saying, thank you for what you did, blah, 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 blah. Unfortunately, he's not with us anymore. And you think, oh, God, no. And we get a lot of letters like that in the ambulance office thanking us for what we've done, even if they haven't turned out too well. But some of them do touch you. But like I said before, you can't afford to be personally involved, because if you do, you'd be out of the job in a couple of weeks. I mean, we had one the other day with a motorcyclist, and when we got to A&E, we put him in there, and the x-ray went within seconds of being there. And young bloke, early 20s, he'll never walk again. And we just chatted away and put him in. And I was there within a couple of minutes of being in hospital, and they just showed you this x-ray, and I just looked at it and I thought, and the guy says, never walk again. Oh my God, think. And that's what I say, if you got two personally involved or kept thinking about it all the time, you wouldn't do the job. And that's why the good thing about me personally is that I can see terrible injuries and that, and it doesn't really affect me. I just get on with it. As I said before, children, not too good children, but just block off and get on with the job.
You mentioned briefly, just in passing, one said you mentioned working with the police as well. What does that involve?
I fly for the Norfolk Police occasionally, because I fly the bulk of 105, the big 117, and the twin screw. That's my three aircraft I fly with the company. So I do the odd police work on the twin screw, and I just do the odd duty when I need to fill in if the guys have been busy or they've been need to fill in. They'll use me. So I'll do the duty with the police, which is quite fun.
So what kind of thing would you be involved in?
Everything the police do. I mean, police chases, missing people, looking for vehicles, whatever that's going on, that they will involve me. Oh, they will involve the, whatever, they involve their own force helicopter, I'll be flying it. So some is exciting, some is boring. They've got a good setup as well down in Norwich Airport. I enjoy doing the odd duty there.
How often might that happen?
Every couple of weeks I'll do one or two duties. I won't do, say I'm the senior pilot on the HEM side, on the air ambulance. So my primary role is air ambulance, and I'll only do the odd duty with the police, say, to help out. I'll also do the odd commercial. Like week before last, I was flying the BBC camera crew at the Grand National.
What was that like?
It was good. I mean, a bit of a nightmare of a couple of days because of aircraft availability and other things. But I got up to Aintree just after lunch, and I got back at about 8 o'clock at night. It was just flying around the National. Quite different.
Did they have specific requirements?
Well, they've got a big camera fit on the aircraft, which takes up most of the back seat. Well, all sorts of gizmos. And an engineer sits behind me in the back. You've got a cameraman who sits in the front, who's got a joystick and a monitor. I've got a little monitor that stops on the top of the console, so I can see what they're filming. I can't normally see what they're actually filming visually, looking at the aircraft, because it's on the camera's fitted on the outside of the aircraft, on that side, on a big bowl. And it can be a bit of a mare, because if you're like following horses, you've got to keep the speed, right? You can't get too close, you can't get too low. If you get too low, it's threefold, it's too noisy, it spooks the horses, it irritates the people. So you've got to be at sufficient height so you're not interfering. You've also got to be aware of what's going on around you, because like entry, there's helicopters going out all the time from visiting the National itself. Yeah, it's just, it's different. And then they'll say, could I hover here for about 45 minutes? I don't mind hovering for a couple of minutes, 45 minutes, you know, but you just sit there in the hover and watch it. Yeah, watch the race. Didn't even have a bet on.
So let me understand how it works. You actually work for, is it you work for Sterling?
Sterling Aviation is my employer, yeah. And he's got contracts, obviously, with the air ambulance and also the police, and the BBC, and various other contracts they've got. We've got little training aircraft, little Schweitzer, we've got the Jet Rangers, Twin Squirrel, Bulk 105 and the Beaky 117 on the rotary side. And whichever one's required, an appropriate pilot flight. I don't fly the Jet Ranger, which is a single engine aircraft. I don't fly that. That's another two or three guys fly that. The Schweitzer is our training officer. He flies that and takes all these potential pilots out and trial flights, trial them instructor flights, and teaches people on how to fly, or gives instructors, instructs instructors, which is good. But yeah, I'll just get tasks and whatever they want me to do. So majority of the time is air ambulance, and then I'll get flipped off as required.
Sounds very varied.
Yeah, people. I mean, I would prefer it if I was kept on air ambulance all the time. That's how I would prefer it. But it's a variety of flying, especially with the police and also the old commercial trip. You know, I mean, last year I had gone flying out of the Norfolk Showground doing flies around the bay. Nightmare. He's putting little kids with ice cream all over me. Yeah. No, but yeah, I'll do that as well, as required. But I've got to be a company man then.
Can you tell me a bit more about working with the police? I was intrigued by the idea of, I don't know what the procedures for car chases are and things like that.
Well, I mean, they'll get a call. I mean, we monitor all the radios throughout the whole of Norfolk, so the various regions, they've all got their own radios. And in the police office down there, they've got all of them, and they just monitor them. And then all of a sudden, they'll get called up and say, we've got a failed stop, say, for instance, somebody's failed stop, or it's been a hit and run, and they'll say, describe what the vehicle is, where it was last seen, and we'll get out there as fast as possible. We've got an Alpha call sign, and you've got a Bravo call sign, and you've just got normal call sign. The Bravo is when you're on a call to get out there as soon as possible to assist in whatever police job's going on. And you've got an Alpha, which we is life and bullets, we call it. Guns involved, you know, so that it's a little bit more, it's a life-threatening situation, so that's where it comes under Alpha. And we'll just, whatever call sign we need to use, we'll use that. And it gives us priority over air traffic. But yeah, on a car chase, we will, or a car location, we will just find, go to the area where it's last seen. If we then pick it up, we've got obviously various bits of pieces on the aircraft we can use to locate. And all we then is if we have located it, then I will then ensure that I keep it in view, regardless of what it's doing. Bearing in mind, they're not going to lose me. The car can't lose me. Then they know that. They might, if they go into woods, all right, they're in a wood. They've got to come out. You know, so and I don't understand. You see these people on TV trying, the helicopter, they try and lose it. Nah, there's no way. I mean, you know, I can hover, I can land, I can just sit there, do circles around them. They're not going to lose me, so I'll just follow. If we're going to do a stop, then they'll obviously, they've got their own procedures for car. We won't stop from the aircraft, I mean, it's all on my ground, and we will just locate and report back. Same as missing people. We will go on last area he's been seen, or he or her, whatever, what they're dressed in, age, height, description of everything they've got. And we've done very well, actually. When you think of individuals, you think one person, would you be able to find them? I mean, we had a job up near Wells, and there was an old bloke that was missing. He had all sorts of problems, mentally and physically. But we found him. I mean, there he was. In a load of people. I mean, he wasn't just sort of in the middle of the field by himself. There was a lot of people walking him down and all that. And we said, and he was supposed to be wearing a, I think it was a fawn coloured cardigan. And I saw this guy with a cardigan wrapped around his waist, would you believe? And when we flew up and down a couple of times, we said, me and one of the cops, I said, there's a guy there with a cardigan wrapped around his waist. And we zoomed onto him, and that was the bloke we were looking for. It was just, you know. So even if he wasn't wearing exactly what we described, we still picked him out on all these people. And it was a nice big summer day with lots of people walking down the beach. We found the individual we're looking for. And children, we had lots of missing children, or looking for them all the time. And it's quite surprising how many we do find, even on beaches or seafronts with thousands of people. And you think, oh, there's no way. But just by concentrating, taking your time, process of elimination, you come up with a result, you know. I think it's fantastic.
Being methodical.
Yeah. If you rush, I mean, anybody can rush up down the beach and see, there's 10,000 people there, we can't find him. I think our worst thing on police is when they say, you know, oh, there's a white van, oh, here we go. It is. These are white vans. And if you're lucky to pick up the right one, it's fortunate that they. But that's probably the worst thing. But we'll do that. We'll assist officers on the ground. One of our partners was commended last year for they were locating an individual somewhere just south of Norwich. It's quite a buggy area, and the policeman on the ground was walking along, and he went into this, I mean, thick, horrible, whatever it was, and he couldn't get out. He's fighting, so landed, and the cops on board deployed and pulled this bloke out of this sort of gooey, horrible mess. It would have been probably a disaster if they hadn't. So you commend that, which is quite good. I think the most amusing was that we did a boat follow.
A boat follow?
Yeah.
How did that work?
Well, we got called to somebody who had been reported that they'd stolen something from another boat. And they were hot pursuiting up the Broads. And they went up there and follow this boat. It's quite entertaining.
I'm guessing you could go a little bit faster than the boat.
Yeah, it was just amusing. Just boat follow. I mean, he wasn't exactly scooting along the road, was he? He could turn off. But yeah, no, sometimes quite amusing, sometimes quite
I think that's pretty much covered everything I wanted to. Is there anything that I've missed, particularly about the about anything about the display flying, about the air ambulance?
No, I mean, the only thing I'd like to add on the air ambulance is the fact that it's a great job to do, because the service we've given to the public, and if it wasn't for the public putting their hands in the pocket, we wouldn't have the air ambulance, we wouldn't have the people getting out there. And that's what people just got reminded, that it's for them, because they've paid for it. We've got a lot of dedicated paramedics and doctors and air crew that fly the air ambulance 365 days of the year, by the way, except for weather. But no, it's great, and I would love to see the government actually put their hands in the pockets and put a bit more money into the charities, and not get rid of the charities. And the charity workers themselves, I think, they do a fantastic job. They'll go to any little village fete, any little event that's going on in their parish, and raise money. And we've got a charity shop up at Fakenham, and it was going to be closed down because the rent was costing more than they were actually gaining. There was a little old lady paid the rent for 3 months, 3 years. So she's paid for the rent because of the charity, which I think is great. That's the spirit it should be. You know, it's fantastic to see that. What I don't like is, don't get me wrong, I don't quote me, but sometimes when you see people putting the money in after the event, you know, it's nice to see, and don't get me wrong, and I think it's great, and especially when people leave great big amounts of money for the charity, it's fantastic. But it would be nice just to have a steady flow coming in, people not having to wait before they're touched by the air ambulance or involved in it before they start. That would be a nice thing. But I say, there's so many charities around, and I mean, you go in every shop nowadays and you've got so many different boxes you can put money in for cancer research, or leukemia, and various charities. But I think the air ambulance is well worthy of people putting hands in the pocket.
Thank you very much.
No problem.